It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR, and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
I was at a National Consumer Law Center conference many, many years ago when Elizabeth Warren was the keynote speaker, and she came and she proposed this idea she had about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. When she was done, I turned to the person next to me and said, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That will never work. But it has been a great thing, and they've done a lot of good work. Suing Capital One, I mean, what could be better than suing Capital One, right, for those of us in Virginia? Making them pay $210 million. These were people who were duped into paying for credit monitoring and other add-ons. They targeted the unemployed or people with poor credit. They falsely claimed the services were mandatory or free. So in other words, they had a call center full of lying people. Some people were wrongly told it would improve their credit scores if they signed up, but then they didn't report it to the credit reporting agency. So kudos to CFPB for making Cap One pay for what we all know they've been doing this kind of stuff for a long time.
Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, continues his explanation of new developments in consumer protection law. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about another settlement by a big bank lender in the aftermath of the foreclosure crisis. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 208, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice and representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Wells Fargo Bank has agreed to spend at least $42 million to settle allegations that it neglected the maintenance and marketing of foreclosed homes in Black and Latino neighborhoods across the country, the National Fair Housing Alliance announced earlier this month. A year-long investigation by the advocacy group found that homes serviced by Wells Fargo in minority communities were far more likely than those in white areas to be left in disrepair, with broken windows, unkempt yards, or water damage. These homes were also less likely to have for sale signs than ones in predominantly white neighborhoods. Under the agreement, Wells Fargo, which did not admit to doing any wrongdoing, will provide $27 million to nonprofit groups to promote homeownership, neighborhood stabilization, and property rehabilitation in minority communities in 19 metropolitan areas. It will also provide $11.5 million to the Department of Housing and Urban Development to help 25 other cities. Many neighborhoods across the country have been seriously damaged by the foreclosure crisis, said Shanna Smith, president and chief executive of the Alliance. This agreement will help lay the foundation for the industry to get some of those neighborhoods back on their feet. The agreement addresses one of the lingering scars of the housing crisis. As the number of foreclosures climbed after the housing crash, lenders scrambled to offload foreclosed properties, with many piling up in minority neighborhoods where there was a high concentration of subprime loans. Communities have been eager to see these vacant properties sold because over time they can bring down property values and attract crime. areas such as Prince George's County, Maryland, are still struggling to rebound. In 2010, about 7.4% of homes in that area, known for its concentration of affluent African Americans, were empty, compared with 4.6% in Prince William County, Virginia, another hard-hit area. The agreement resolves an April 2012 complaint that the advocacy group filed with HUD. As part of the agreement, Wells Fargo agreed to give borrowers who plan to live in a home after the purchase priority in the bidding process over investors eager to snap up cheap houses to rent out or flip. The bank also agreed to develop a fair housing training program for its employees and the real estate agents who sell foreclosed properties. The Housing Alliance has filed two similar complaints against Bank of America and U.S. Bank, but negotiations on a deal have reached an impasse. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Once again, it's time for the weekly question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Nikki. I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Nikki. What question do we have this week?
My question today is, what is a homestead deed?
Well, Nikki, that's an excellent question. We get asked that a lot. A homestead deed is simply a listing of property that otherwise you could lose to your creditors, that you file that list of property with your local circuit court clerk's office, and the simple act of filing the homestead deed protects that property from your creditors. Now, most of the property that people have actually is already automatically protected from your creditors. For example, government benefits, whether it's Social Security, SSI, TANF, unemployment compensation, workers' compensation, it's protected. Pensions, retirements are protected. Child support is protected. And those monies, if deposited in a bank account, are also protected. Your wages, as long as they are less than $290 per week after taxes are withheld, are protected, and that protection also extends to those wages deposited in a bank. Up to $5,000 worth of household goods is protected, $1,000 worth of clothing protected, $3,000 worth of a firearm protected, and $6,000 worth of equity in a motor vehicle, again, protected. So most of what you earn, most of what you receive in income, most of what you own is protected. But there are certain forms of income and certain property that is not protected. Typically, that would be wages that you earn that are more than $290 per week after taxes. If you've got a creditor who's got a judgment against you, they can garnish those wages. And those wages will be forever lost to you unless you file a homestead deed before the garnishment period ends. It's a simple process, but you do need a lawyer to properly prepare the homestead deed, which you file with your local circuit court clerk's office, and then you go down to the court that issued the garnishment, you file your garnishment exemption, and then you finally go to court for a hearing and you claim your exemption. So the homestead deed, just as I say, allows you to protect property that you otherwise would lose to your creditors. Now, it's not an unlimited exemption. You get a $5,000 lifetime exemption for things that you want to protect from your creditors. If you are 65 years of age or older, the exemption is $10,000. If you are caring for a dependent, typically a dependent child, you get an extra $500 for each dependent. And then finally, if you are a disabled veteran, you get an extra $10,000 for a homestead exemption. But again, that's for your entire lifetime, whether that's $5,000, $10,000, or $15,000. So you need to use the homestead exemption very carefully. And typically, it's used in combination with a bankruptcy so that you protect stuff that you otherwise would lose to your creditors right before you file bankruptcy, or perhaps stuff that you would lose to your creditors even though you are filing bankruptcy. But then you protect it, then you file the bankruptcy, and then you've wiped out those debts, you get a fresh start, and hopefully you're not going to fall into debt again, and hopefully you're not going to need to use that homestead deed for many, many years thereafter. Was this an explanation that was helpful to you?
Absolutely. That was very informative because my perception of what a homestead deed was totally different from that. So thank you very much for that information.
Well, you're welcome. And in one clarification that I want to add, even though they call it a homestead deed, you don't need to be a homeowner. You can be a renter and you can still claim a homestead deed. And I think that's the source of a lot of confusion. Again, thanks for being on the show. The creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has sparked a new interest in consumer protection law. Jay Spear, executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explained new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are Jay's remarks.
Now, frozen bank accounts. I thought this issue was resolved 2 years ago when Treasury and other federal agencies adopted final interim rules regarding the garnishment of bank accounts. And the rule basically is that when somebody's bank account is garnished, the bank has to look at the account, and if you're having directly deposited exempt benefits like Social Security, for example, you get $500 a month, they have to give you access to $1,000, kind of a simple rule. And for those of you that haven't been around legal aid for a while, you don't know, we've been fighting this issue for years and years and years. And so this rule was just a godsend because we had lots and lots of these cases. That's basically what the rule is. And these final interim rules were 2 years ago, and they actually in May just did the final garnishment rule, not really changing much from the interim rule, except they clarify the definition of a garnishment order that includes the orders of levies issued by a state or a state agency or a municipality. So the definition of a garnishment or a garnishment order is pretty broad. And it does, in fact, include these notices of liens that some of these debt collection attorneys have been trying to get around with. We found that now, just recently, that there are some banks are still freezing accounts, BB&T. They claim it doesn't apply to notices of liens, which is ridiculous. It clearly does apply to that. If this happens, and a national bank is a small bank out in the western part of the state, I heard they're doing it as well. Banks hate exposure, media exposure about taking widows' money and stuff like that. In fact, you know, one of these people, I talked with both of these people at BB&T. One lady, she had already, this happened to her account in Danville. She had already moved to North Carolina. They froze her account. She didn't get to legal aid until like 3 weeks later. Meanwhile, she couldn't pay her rent in Greensboro, North Carolina. She lost her house. She got evicted. So thank you very much, BB&T, right? If this happens, you should file complaints with the CFPB. This is within their jurisdiction. And I really encourage people to file complaints with the CFPB. It's really easy. Do it for your client. Don't ask your client to do it. They won't do it. It'll take you 5 minutes. The CFPB, you know, sometimes resolves complaints, and even if they don't resolve them, apparently the director reads through the complaints. Richard Cordray says he reads through these complaints on a regular basis, so they pay attention. So the question has to do, what if you mix the exempt fund with non-exempt funds? That used to be a big issue about the so-called, we referred to it as commingling, and there was this horrible Virginia Supreme Court case from the 70s that said if you commingle exempt and non-exempt money, you lose your entire exemption. That no longer is a problem because they have to give you access to 2 months' worth of your exempt benefits, whether it's been commingled or not. Does not matter. Recent developments at the CFPB. I was at a National Consumer Law Center conference many, many years ago when Elizabeth Warren was the keynote speaker, and she came and she proposed this idea she had about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. When she was done, I turned to the person next to me and said, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That will never work. but it has been a great thing, and they've done a lot of good work suing Capital One. I mean, what could be better than suing Capital One, right, for those of us in Virginia? Making them pay $210 million. These were people who were duped into paying for credit monitoring and other add-ons. They targeted the unemployed or people with poor credit. They falsely claimed the services were mandatory or free. So in other words, they had a call center full of lying people. Some people were wrongly told it would improve their credit scores if they signed up, but then they didn't report it to the credit reporting agency. So kudos to CFPB for making Cap One pay for what we all know they've been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. American Express, they made them pay $85 million in refunds. They were charging unlawful late fees in violation of the Credit Card Act. They failed to report computer disputes to credit bureaus and told customers that they paid off old debt, it would improve their score, but then they didn't report it. So two great things I think that the CFPB has done, among other things. Believe me, you would not bet the OCC and any of these other regulatory agencies that used to have authority in this area wouldn't have done this. I've never seen them do this sort of thing. So, electronic banking. So what's going on with electronic banking? There's this case, FTC versus automated electronic checking. FTC sued this company recently, just a few months ago, I think, or settled with them, I think. And what automated electronic checking is, a payment processor. They operate a payment processing service. And what they found out was they were processing payments for scammers. And a lot of the bank customers caught these unauthorized debits. They would get people's bank account information and were debiting people's accounts for something they never, some sort of club or something that they never signed up for. And they found out that the bank customers were catching these debits, and the banks were rejecting them at a rate of 50 to 100 times the average rejection rate. So what does that tell you? The bank should have known something was going on, right? But, and this is in the complaint, the more return transactions generated by the client merchants, the higher the return fees to automatic electronic checking in the banks. So the banks are making money off this. Their fees. Remember that slide I showed you earlier about this is the best quarter ever in history? Well, some of that money is being made off fraud. But what was particularly interesting about this is that the AEC, who was a defendant in this case, automatic electronic checking, was using something called a remotely created payment order in order to debit these accounts. An RCPO is an electronic image of a virtual check created by the payment processor or merchant using the customer's personal and financial account information. It looks like a traditional check, contains the customer's name, bank account number, and bank routing number. And then they debit your account. You know, when I read this case, I thought to myself, what in the... We have the most unsafe banking system imaginable, this huge hole in it, and we got a big problem.
You've been listening to Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explaining new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, at a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys explaining new developments in consumer protection law.
Where are these folks getting people's bank account information? It's mostly from these online lead generators. So what happens is people go online looking for a loan, and they think they're applying for a loan at a payday loan place, which is bad enough. But what they're actually doing is going to a lead generator. There was actually a story on the local news here recently. Man loses money in online loan scam. This guy went to a place called EliteCashWire.com. And here's there's a copy of their website, and it's a very good-looking woman, a very good-looking man, you know, laying in the sun with money. So we all want to, you know, we want to be like them and get money, right? So if you go on this website, this is what you have to give them. And it goes through all this information. They want your bank routing information, your bank routing number, your account number, and all this sort of thing. And as they told the reporter who did the story, now, they actually conned the reporter who did the story because she reported that they were a victim in the scam too. Uh-huh. This guy actually applied for a $2,500 loan and didn't even get the loan. They just, after he had applied, they sent him an email that looked like it came from his bank, BB&T, saying, you need to pay these fees in order for us to, for them to transfer the money into your account. It was a $400 in fees. So he paid the $400 in fees and never got the loan. So he just out $400. And so the, when the reporter talked to these folks at Elite Cash Wire, they said they were victims too. That they're just an advertising agency is what they told her. And it says it right here that on their website, Elite Cash Wire is an advertising agency, not a financial institution. Elite Cash Wire will place you with one of our several loan providers. So maybe they're a dating service, I'm not sure. But what happens is they get all your information and they sell it. That's why they're called a lead generator. They generate leads and they sell the leads to anybody who wants to buy them. And they have two main customers. They have online lenders, which are all illegal in Virginia, and scammers, like this guy. The scammer bought it, and now they know his where he banks, and then he wants a loan, and so they scammed him out of the $400. Now, ironically, he's better off not getting the loan, because now he's only out $400. If he'd gotten the loan, he would have been out a whole lot more when he paid back the interest. A couple other things I wanted to mention is, as most of you know, Virginia is electing an attorney general this fall. You don't hear much about it because you hear all about the governor's race. But I really hope people will try to push, if you have any chance at all, push the candidates to talk about consumer issues. I actually sent an email to all the candidates saying, these are the consumer issues you ought to be talking about and addressing. And by the way, they're really popular. You should be out there talking about these things. And nobody has responded. No, actually one of them did call me and we had a discussion. But some of the things I think they ought to be looking at is predatory lending, especially internet lending. They're advertising all over TV and it's highly illegal, but our Attorney General's office is doing nothing about it. Other states, they are. In Minnesota, again, Lori Swanson, a Minnesota judge orders online payday lender to pay nearly $8 million. So it can be done. But our Attorney General, for whatever reason, is not doing anything about it, and the candidates should be talking about it. Consumer complaints. Last year, the General Assembly, it used to be if you had a consumer complaint in Virginia and you called the Virginia Department of Consumer Affairs. Now that's been moved over to the Attorney General's office. So how are they handling those complaints? I really haven't heard much about it. But that's a big part of their function now. What are they doing with those complaints? How are they helping people? If you look on the Attorney General's website, it looks like all they're doing is running a giant referral service. And they refer callers to us, too. Even internet loans, they refer to us sometimes. They need to aggressively pursue consumer scammers, and they need to pursue friendly consumer legislation. So if you get a chance at all to go to one of these debates and you have a chance to ask something, or if you know anybody in these campaigns, you need to push them on this. Because I think the Attorney General's office makes a huge difference in other states. You look at Minnesota, you look at New York, California, they're doing a lot. And a lot more could be done here. And then finally, there's a new SEC-ordered payday and car title lenders to make new disclosures. These are going to be required now. If you're late on a payment, we will call you at work and put your job in jeopardy. You will apply for the loan, but we will give it to you if you're breathing. Don't be late on any payments. Don't ask why. Just don't be late. We won't do anything the law doesn't require, so don't bother us with questions about how we're calculating your interest and remaining balance. Any excuses about why you didn't pay, we don't listen to that because you're lying. And above all, remember that once you get this loan, we own you. Now, these are actually not going to be required disclosures. Too bad, though, right? Because they're all true.
You've been listening to Jay Speer, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explaining new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia Legal Aid Attorneys. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Ain't gonna let no one turn me around, huh? That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Since the commercialization of the Internet in 1984, it has become a potential vehicle for attacks on the reputations of individuals and businesses alike. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney John Dozier talks about Internet defamation and why addressing such online defamation is important in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on November 30th, 2011. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wakeman.